Hey, baby.
Hey.
Naomi and Andy here with a quick Q/request.
Yes. So, okay, Acast is doing these audience surveys, okay? We put the link in the show notes. The link is going to be in the link tree on our Instagram and everything like that. Here's the thing, Naomi. You know, we're already pretty choosy about the ads that we allow on the show. No weapons manufacturers.
Raytheon, get out of here.
Yeah. Screw off, Raytheon. But we want to make sure that the ads are kind of tailored to y'all.
Right.
Okay? Right? Say you want to hear ads for A Different World DVD box sets.
We need to know that.
We need
can
to
go
know
out
that.
To them. We can get the word out. But we only can get the word out if you give us the word. So you got to fill out the survey. It is quick, quick, quick. And it just lets us know if the ads you're hearing are the right ads for you.
Yeah.
So get on over to the show notes where that link is or the Couples Therapy link tree and fill out that quick survey so we can pass the word on to Acast.
All right. Roll it.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for Couples Therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's Couples Therapy. Couples Therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Andy.
And I am Naomi.
We're a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple different questions from a couple different listeners. We try to keep it light to combat the dark in the universe. This is the new intro, Naomi. I'm making it the intro.
It's so funny, you guys, the way before we get on mic, you know, it may surprise you to know that we do sit and say, what should we talk about? And we do say, like, okay, we're going to hit this and this and this. And we have it in a certain order. And then we start rolling. And then Andy will just say something. And I'm like,
Once I just start talking and the white hot room in my brain just like opens up and spills out. And it's just.
And then I got to pick it up.
Yeah.
He put it down. I got to pick it up. And then I got to run with it somewhere. And I said, I don't even know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because throwing me off.
As dystopia just continues on.
Stop.
I feel like we are in a position to bring a bit of levity into.
Well, you might be able to bring levity if you didn't constantly bring up dystopia looming.
Well, hey, look. We did say we wanted to talk about the Barbie movie about, what, 12 months late? When did it come out? It came out in 2021.
We saw Barbie last night, and it did come out, I believe, in July.
Okay.
We did watch it. We did rent it.
So we're only, you know, what, 4 or 5 months behind?
Just 3.
July? August?
Well, I'm doing July 2, August 2, September, September 2, October.
Okay, 3 months behind.
But
everyone
the point
else.
Is, we saw the Barbie movie, and y'all might have to explain to me why so many folks was crying. Because I watched it, and I was like, uh-huh, okay. And then, yes, America Ferrara had a monologue, but it's, I don't know. I guess, you know, there's just times, and this is why, you know, I'm actually proud of myself for not rushing to the theater, right? Sometimes you can feel that social pressure to be part of the cultural Barbenheimer conversation. And you know what? In a way, it's good that I saw it afterwards because, you know, no one's asking me what I think. I don't have to have conversations about my thoughts, you know? And so, because I just, it left me lukewarm. However, there were some bright spots. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it was a bad motion picture. Lord knows Greta Gerwig said, honey, I ain't making indie no more. I'm going to use all your money. She said, bitch, I'm going to use all your money.
I want to say this, though. For IP, and maybe this is why everyone was so surprised by it, because they graded it on a curve. And they're like, oh, it's IP. Right.
The Barbie movie brought to you by Mattel.
Right. It was surprisingly poignant. I mean, anytime that there is a film that grapples, you know, it could be an indie film or it could be like a big major motion picture. As long as I feel like the characters are honestly grappling with their mortality, it does strike a nerve in me, you know.
Uh-huh.
There is, you know, whether it is, I'm trying to think of something, you know, it doesn't have to be Ingmar Bergman, but like, you know, if Optimus Prime, you know, right, was discussing, you know, his having an existential crisis. Now, that's what I want to see now. If Barbie's going to have an existential crisis, I want to see every single toy character have an existential crisis.
Well, isn't that what Mattel is planning? This is why Mattel has all these movies planned with their IP. You need to pitch on the new Uno. I say, what is it to reverse? What is it to draw four in this economy? That's what we need to be talking about.
My parents could draw four, but I can barely draw one now. What's going on?
Exactly.
But I mean, look, is this Guy Debord? I can't remember. In Society the Spectacle, but essentially that there are these now. We're reduced in these times of late capitalism, or we're reduced to just like all spectacle, and any kind of critiques of capitalism, such as the ones that were made in Barbie, are drawn into and sold back to you, the consumer.
Right.
So it is interesting. I think, you know, I could write an academic paper on the nature of the Barbie,
which in
film.
A way makes you a Ken. That makes you a real Ken, a real mansplainer.
I was seen.
Barbie spoke to Andy's heart more than spoke to mine.
When Kuti Gatwa talked about Stephen Malkmus in it.
There is a pavement
reference
in Barbie. Uh-huh. You know Andy was seen.
But I'll tell you this, Naomi. Have I ever once mansplained pavement to you?
No. But
I know my audience.
You know, exactly. It's like, you know, I wouldn't allow it. You know, I have no interest.
Yes.
You know, if I were to ask you a question, I'm sure it could elicit a monologue.
Uh-huh.
But I will never ask that question.
Yes.
And that's beautiful.
And you know better. You know better than to ask the question.
Well, exactly.
Why is it called Crooked Rain?
And when I'm asking that question, I'm Jiminy Glick.
Yeah.
Why is it called Crooked Rain? That's my Jiminy Glick impression, you guys. But yes, we did see Barbie. We're part of culture again. I will say my favorite part of the movie. We're not talking enough. No one told me Kingsley Benadire.
Oh my God.
He was the funniest part to me.
Weapon.
I know we're all talking about
person.
Gosling, but it's like, yes, I know Gosling from Mickey Mouse Club. I expected the vocals. I expected the dancing. So I wasn't shocked there. Kingsley Benadire
every
made me
scene.
Laugh. Every single time he was on camera, he was hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, and my introduction to him, yes, I know he was Bridgerton. I'm such an auntie. I just call anybody. I'm like, oh, is that a Bridgerton? That's Bridgerton. But I know him from Vera, my British crime drama Vera. He played the medical examiner on Vera, like for maybe a couple seasons, because they cycle through them on them shows. So he did a couple, and then he said, let me go make some American money. Let me make some Netflix
sure.
money.
Sure. Kingsley, if you're listening, please contact us, reach out. We want to have you on the show.
Kingsley Benadire, we want to talk to you because having seen you in Barbie, I know you're fun.
Yeah.
I know you're fun. I know you're a goof troop. I know that you have an open heart and a loose butt.
But I love what happened, though, was when he was required to give a line with gravitas towards the end, it hit like a Mack truck.
I mean, come on now. He's got the chops. He's got the training. He has the range.
He did it. A piano fell out of the top story of the building, landed on me.
You felt it.
Yes,
you felt
I
it.
Felt it
in your bones. So yeah, you know, it's like great. You know, in our household, the Barbie movie resonated with a man. And that, I think, speaks to
more with
Barbie.
More with me than it did with you.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Andrew, that's what I just said.
More, but I'm saying more. You said it registered with a man.
It resonated with a man.
More so than it did with you.
Just, the point is, in this house, Barbie-centered a male experience.
I felt seen for the first time, Naomi.
You know what?
What?
Speaking of being seen, feeling seen, we have finally seen the winner of our wedding contest / butt plug contest. I was going to say butt plug contest, and it sounded a little bit darker, so I had to give a little slash.
If this is your first episode, what has been happening over the last couple of weeks is we ask people to comment on Apple Podcast, 5-star review, and then your worst wedding experience in the actual body of the comment.
Your own wedding, a wedding you attended, something like that.
We put those up on Instagram. Had you, the listeners, vote on it.
I mean, if you're not following Couples Therapy Pod on Instagram, you better correct that. Yes. You better correct that, okay?
Yes. You better just be following animal accounts, either rescue accounts or the dodo and stuff like that, and Couples Therapy Pod. Those are the only things you should have on your Instagram.
Well, and also myself, Blacktress Comedy, and at Andy Backerman.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Individually as well.
Sure.
But yeah, that's, we're just kind of trying to curate a feed for you.
Yeah. Curate a vibe,
you're
as
welcome.
They say.
You're welcome.
So the winner is, we don't want to do a drum roll because I'll knock the cat food off the table. Manderson Jr.
Now, in case you don't remember, here was their story. My spouse and I moved to California from Ohio months before our wedding in Ohio. This made it difficult to plan because while our families were local, we were not. So we thought it best to have our bachelorette party the Friday before our Sunday wedding. The night started out fine. I went with my party. My spouse went with theirs. However, my friends got me too turnt. We ended up meeting up at the dance gay bar downtown, where I drunkenly entered a twerk contest, stole my spouse's phone, and ran away from my friends. By the end of the night, it was down to me and my friend who is not local to this city. She went to call an Uber, turned around, and I was gone, leaving her with no way home as she was staying with me and my family and didn't know their address. This led to me passing out on the street and my friend / bridesmaid. Okay, so this is already a friend that is working. Okay. This led to me passing out on the street and my friend / bridesmaid disappeared too. The next day, I woke up on the streets of Columbus, brown out, stumbling, looking for a way to call home. When I finally got home, we realized my dear friend was still missing. What was supposed to be a wedding rehearsal quickly turned into a search party and a missing persons report for my friend. A few hours later, we learned she had found a nice hotel room, slept there, took a nice warm shower, and watched Crazy Rich Asians while I slept on the street.
The streets of Columbus. That sounds like a Bruce Springsteen B-side.
There are a lot of details left out due to space, but basically, we lived the plot of The Hangover just 100 times gayer. We hope this gives you a chuckle.
Well, they're the winner.
It gave a chuckle.
Manderson Jr.
It gave winning, okay? So many votes came in for this one. This people, though, okay, because the friend, I believe a strong black woman, if memory serves, was like, has a large following on social media and really brought that following to this post.
Mm-hmm.
And those people really came through with the votes, okay?
I hope they also follow the, subscribe to the show.
I said, look, if you're going to bring all these people here to vote so you can win a butt plug, y'all also need to be subscribing.
Yeah.
These people who voted, I need you to subscribe to Couples Therapy Pod. I need you to leave a 5-star review, okay? So make sure that all your contacts know this, all right? And this was a close race at one point because, you know, the seahorse wedding also got a lot of people riled up.
Mimi created a pie chart, which we will put up on Instagram.
Well, yeah, you know, we
about how the votes broke down.
Voting transparency.
Transparency.
We believe in transparency in this democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to say, number 5, you know, really leveraged a following. Brought them to the post. I'm going to say that. I mean, don't get me wrong. This is hysterical. This is wild. I'm also obsessed with a friend who was like, okay, I turn around. You gone. I'm going to do me. She said, ain't no reason we both got to die in the streets of Columbus. I'm about to give me a hotel. She said, I got my card on me. I'm going to live. And I respect
the streets of Columbus. Is that what Bruce Springsteen sounds like?
That was a good impression. That was good. We're really doing our impressions today. I've done Jiminy Glick. You're doing Bruce Springsteen. It's coming together. Thank you all for your 5-star reviews, your hilarious stories. When we have another treat to give away, we will do another one of these. But we always appreciate you guys rocking up with the good stories, the 5 stars, coming through on Instagram. Love you to death.
So by the way,
thank you.
Feel free to leave a 5-star review and any kind of story now, just for the heck of it. Just
anything.
For our entertainment.
Yeah, we'll read it. We'll read it. So don't get me wrong.
Yes. But Manderson Jr.?
this butt plug's going out to you. The only couples therapy branded butt plug in existence to date.
To date.
We might try it. We're
still doing the research to figure
out. Would you buy them for as holiday presents? If we could have a rollout before the holidays.
That's too quick. That's too quick. Because we're still reaching out trying to find the people who have the capacity to scale up this operation.
Yes,
because
AKA Mimi.
The business. The team. And the team being one.
Transparency,
Naomi. The team being one.
Transparency.
We have asked her to look into it. Stop it.
Credit where credit's due, my dear.
The point is, there is research being done into scale up this operation. Can we find somebody who can make these and send them from their location? You know what I'm saying, you guys? Because as you know from us, the few times we've sent things out, we get them to you 2-3 months later, because it's like you can't get your girl to the post office or UPS.
Also, we live in a modest apartment in East Hollywood. We don't have room for boxes of butt plugs in here.
I was going to say, that'd be funny if we had a butt plug closet, but we don't. We don't have space for a butt plug closet right now. But you know what we do have space for?
What do we have space for, Naomi?
One of our favorite people on the pod.
Oh, my God. And our old friend, Aparna Nancherla. Yes, that's right. Today, folks, we have our dear pal, Aparna.
This is beautiful because it's also the second one of our dear friends who is coming to the pod, rejoining. Actually, third, but because, you know, we've had Josh and Aaron, Joe Firestone, Aparna. These are our friends who are making things happen, who are creating things, bringing things into the world. Aparna has written the book, Unreliable Narrator, Me, Myself, and Imposter Syndrome. If you don't buy Aparna's book, I'm going to be mad at you, okay? Because Parn has the goods. Parn is a writer extraordinaire. She is hysterical. You've seen her comedy specials. You've seen her late night sets. She wrote on Totally Biased with W. Kamau Belsch. Parn has been here.
Corporate.
Do you remember the show Corporate? Okay. Parn is it. We love Parn. An Unreliable Narrator. I have started it. I'm like a third of the way through. It's, you know, it's what I expected, what I love from Aparna. So funny, so relatable. Also very vulnerable, very honest. And so I think it's both interesting for people who just like, okay, I like that comic, let's check it out. And then also like, I relate to this sentiment, let's check it out. Oh, I want to know more about what it is to navigate this industry, this world, as someone dealing with, you know, depression and imposter syndrome and those kinds of things. You know, Aparna brings it all.
Yeah, we talk about that a little bit in this episode too.
Yeah, oh, definitely. So, you know, I've sold it. Unreliable Narrator, you better grab your copy.
Or else Naomi will dox you. She's been threatening everyone online with doxing if they don't buy the book.
I'm going to dox you.
Naomi's become a Aparna's street team.
Really quickly, before we get to a part, I do have to just share something that's very funny. You know, obviously the Barbie movie has a lot of fun original songs. And so we were looking at the credits and watching the, you know, seeing like who wrote what and who sang what. Andrew Beckerman was looking at the, you know, the credits for the song, and he screamed, discovering that Lizzo's name was Melissa.
Melissa.
Melissa Jefferson is the true government name of Lizzo. And Andy said, what?
I knew Nicki Minaj's real name, because also Ice Spice, Nicki Minaj and Ice Spice do a song at the end, and Ice Spice's real name is Isis.
It's like Isis Nija something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Andy couldn't take the people's names.
Because
he couldn't take the people had names.
I do get it. Like, if you are a star, like a rap star or a rock star or something like that, and you have an alias, when you learn their real name, they lose all their power. Whatever that thing is that their celebrity, that their charisma creates, once you learn what their real name is, you're just like, oh, you're just like Steve Greeps? That's it? That's your name?
Well, it's really like, what if God was one of us? It's giving that energy.
Yeah.
That's what it's giving when you realize, you know, iconic Lizzo. Melissa Jefferson. Melissa Jefferson. You guys heard the new Melissa Jefferson?
Yeah.
New Melissa Jefferson drop.
She did a cover of the Jeffersons theme song. Move it on up.
I will not support this bit. Mm. I will support this bit. So you know what, MZ? I'm going to make you say what I need you to say. Without further ado,
roll it. By the way, first thing I got to say, we're recording this the day that alert is happening at 20 after the hour, kind of phone alert. And the anti-vaxxer contingent of the United States, which is what, like 300 million people, they say that it will trigger something in our blood that will turn us into mutants or something.
Can't
like
wait.
That.
We cannot wait.
So
how do you know about a phone alert ahead of time?
Because it's basically a test of the emergency alert system.
And they're putting it over phones
and radios and, you know, everything like that to test it today.
And they say...
And the anti-vaxxers were like, it's going to interact with the DNA.
Yes. So if this happens at 20 after the hour and we all turn into mutants, you will hear it live, although we won't be around to publish this.
That's true.
Oh, boy.
So if we all turn into mutants, we know the anti-vaxxers are right.
Why did they decide on this specific alert?
Okay. When you are an irrational person that lives in a fantasy land, who knows what your little, you know, childlike mind attaches to.
But you know how, I don't know, if you're like a PTA mom or something, you're like, well, April's kind of quiet. We got to do something in April. Maybe a bake sale. So maybe the anti-vaxxers are like that. They're like, we got to do something.
Right.
For
right.
October.
We need something. Yeah.
Rally
spooky
around.
Season.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
What if the...
Which is why we're becoming zombies.
Yes.
Because it's spooky. We're all becoming ghouls.
Oh, yeah. It's very seasonally appropriate.
So Parn, now, you know, you're promoting your book, Unreliable Narrator.
Here's the hard hitting questions.
The hard hitting. And I guess, you know, and something you talked about this publicly on social medias, but just about sort of the irony of promoting yourself and your work when that work is about the imposter syndrome of it all.
Yes.
And sort of how have you been managing that? Because I think you and I are similar. I mean, Andy's the same way. I think our dear friend Joe Firestone, who also has a book, is the same way, where we're like, I just want to do the thing. I don't want to have to, like, prove to everyone I did the thing.
Yes. Yes. I was trying to reckon with myself the other day. I was like, what part of the process do I actually like? Because it was hard to write the book, and now it's hard that it's out there. I'm like, which part gave me any pleasure? And I think I figured out it was when I originally had the idea before I began any sort of execution.
Yeah, that's me.
That was it.
Oh, that's
that, just that little sliver.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the good time.
Come on, can't you, like, when you see your bank account and you see all that fat book cash in there?
Book cash.
You're like, I don't know where to spend this first. Do I, you know, a 8-week trip to Malta? What do I do with all of this money?
8-week trip to Malta.
Well, my superpower is being able to convert even great news into immediate anxiety. So I think with me, the book cash was just because I was lucky enough to get in advance. And then for me, it was immediately like, I'm never going to make this back for them. They have made a horrible error. Yeah.
So wait, can I, like, dive into this a little further? You know, you have this idea. Why even do anything with it then? If the idea is you enjoy the idea, and that's the that's the part of the process you actually do like, and then the doing is the part that brings on anxiety and neurotic kinds of feelings and all the, you know, the Freudian soup that we're in 2023. Yes. Why not be like, you know what, that was a nice idea. I'm just going to keep doing stand-up and acting.
That's me, except I don't do stand-up or acting. I say that was a nice idea. It was fun to have it. Good to know that the gears are still turning in there. But I say, let it be. Let it be.
Mm-hmm. Naomi's a huge Beatles fan, by the way.
I think sometimes I get caught up in other people's, like, expectations, you know, where they'll be like, what's up next? What you got going? And then I feel like I pressure to say or be doing something, and then I'm like, well, I guess it's this idea that I was once psyched about, but now it's become a burden. But I guess it's what I will tell people at parties for a while.
Well, especially right during the lockdown, during the strike, it was all.
Naomi, can I interrupt you? Why are we going back to lockdown? We called it QAR. That was our thing.
Oh,
we trademarked it, by the way. We trademarked the word QAR. Let's go back to QAR. We're calling it QAR.
QAR.
Okay. So my thing is, like, well, because what happens is I always take a beat because there is an impulse to say, pandemic. And then I have to remember that, no, the pandemic is not over. And when people say in the pandemic as though it's past tense, I bristle, but I'm so used to hearing it. So it takes me a beat because my impulse is pandemic. No, 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 that's not true. Lockdown. The 15 months yes. we were mostly in the house.
And oh, like, is that how long it was? I can't. I never even thought to measure it.
You didn't? That's all
well,
I was
just
doing.
In my head, it just felt like it didn't, you know, exist in the actual laws of time.
Right.
Yeah, it was in a pocket dimension outside of it.
But I'm saying that, and then certainly the 5 months of strikes, you know, for WGA and, you know, what's still going on for SAG, like, it, writing the book gave you kind of a tether, a way to yes. say, like, I've done, first I was doing this thing, then it is, this thing is coming out.
Yeah. But I felt kind of, I don't know if you guys feel this way, but I feel like when I'm in the midst of creating something, I feel very confused about how it will ever be done. And also, like, day to day, I don't really understand what's happening.
Well, you say,
do you mean, wait, hold on. Do you mean don't understand what's happening, period? Which I get. Or do you mean don't understand, like, with the actual creative project?
Well, people say with big goals, like, set smaller goals. Like, that's the way you don't get overwhelmed. But I feel like even with the smaller goals, I get overwhelmed.
Mm. Uh-huh. How small are we talking? Like, how would you break down this process? You know, asking for a me who has
okay, so let's say I'm mid writing the book and today I'm like, all you have to do is read over this essay that you wrote and, you know, make any notes or just see where anything is, and then I'll start reading it and I'll immediately spiral. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like for you when you say immediately spiral?
I'll just be like, this is the worst thing I've ever read. Why am I doing this? Like, I'll just question the whole process. Yeah, it's like I have trouble focusing on just the thing in front of me without zooming out and being absolutely. Like, what's the point of any, why are any of us here, really?
Right.
Yes. So it goes, so then goes to an existential dread. Like, it yes. goes right from, like, oh, I don't know about, you know, the placement of this comma all the way to
yeah,
all the
yeah.
way to, like, should we exist?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like those on the computer, you have the shortcut keys. I feel like I have too many shortcut keys to the
to get existential, to existential dread. And now, does that impact, or how does it impact your relationship?
Oh, wow.
Because,
oh,
you know, it's funny because, you know, certainly you're open about these, your emotional and mental health struggles. But even in recounting them, right, on stage or talking to people, you still seem very measured. You know mm-hmm, what I mean? Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. seem like it's something that's, like, out of control or out of your
yeah,
control.
Yeah.
And we all know, like, we're different, you know, with our partners and the people we live with and the people who see us when the mask is off. And I'm like, how, you know, are you... Okay, let me. I'm just gonna give you an image. Are you walking around the house in your pajamas, muttering about how everything's terrible? And then Gabe is like, "Parna, are you okay?" You know what I mean? Like, how, what does it look like?
Yeah, what does it look like when the mask is off?
No, when you're at existential dread. I guess I'm just wondering because also, Gabe is also a very, like, you know, he's a doer. He's an yes. even keel. He's like, we got a plan. You know,
and he also has to, he processes outward. Like, if he's in an emotion, it has to come out and it mm-hmm. has to be, you know, sort of catalyzed externally of, like, I'm going to let all this anger out. And I feel like that's maybe common in relationships where one person processes the opposite of the way the other does, because mine all goes in. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like that I am communicating and I am seeming like I'm doing a good job of expressing, like, how bad I'm doing mentally. But then he'll be like, you got to talk to me. Like, I don't know what's going on with you, or, like, what can I do? And it's like, because a lot of times when you're having mental health issues, you don't really know what you need sometimes.
Yeah.
I just get, like, frustrated because then I'm like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm always yelling, I can't fix my brain with my brain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is also the thing I also run up against when I'm doing creative work, especially the mm-hmm. writing stuff, where I'm like, okay, I know this isn't right, or I know this isn't it, but I don't know how to find what it is, because I yes. have the brain that gave us the first option. You know what I mean? I'm like, how? how do I make it better? If I could make it better, I would have just done that the first time.
Yeah, and I think for me, I have gotten better at like having to verbalize how I'm feeling or like look at things that could have set me off. And doing that out loud with him has been helpful. But I think my default impulse is to kind of just let it all marinate and stew in my head. And then that can, you know, compound. And then I just really like withdraw. And then he's like, I don't know how to reach you.
Okay, so you withdraw. You're going in. Yes, you're shutting
yes,
down a bit.
I'm going in.
I get that.
Okay. Yeah.
I get that. I do.
You go in, Andy?
Yeah, I can ping pong, but a lot of times I'll go in and just like turn into a little walnut.
Oh, little, sure.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I would have said turtle, but I'll take walnut.
Wait, Naomi, you go out only or you go both?
Oh,
I'm out, baby.
She's out.
Baby, it's out there.
Oh, she's a rocket ship flying to Mars. She is out. She's a rocket ship. I'm a walnut. And that's our relationship. We'll be back after this. And we're back.
No, it is. Yeah. You know what's happening. A lot of crying. A lot of. Yeah. But I don't have. But at the same time, as you're saying, like, I don't know what I need per se. I just know I am unhappy. But it's funny because I'll be like. Because I think for me, there is to be safe enough with a person that I can say things.
Yes.
I think I'm abusing it.
Like if a professor had an open door policy, you're just swinging through at all times.
No, not necessarily. But it's like because I think I grew up where it's like, you're so emotional. Calm down. Don't act this way. Andy really lets me get away with murder. So yes. I am just.
Do you want me to criticize you like your mom criticized?
No. I think that's part of why I'm just like I'll be like, I gotta get out of here. Don't you ever just wish you could just go be in a hotel by yourself? Like I'll say that, and Andy's like, no, and I'm like, what? So am I the asshole? Sorry, I'm really in my upper register, but you know. But then I will say sometimes for me that withdrawal that Andy will do, it makes me nervous because for instance he'll tell me. On the other side of the emotion, right? Like kind of once he's sort of been through it and processed it and figured out what's what.
Yes.
He'll say to me, yeah, that thing upset me or, oh, that thing worried me. And the way my brain internalizes that is he's been mad this whole time. Mm. And he's just waited till you were nice and comfortable to let you know.
Yes.
So wait, that's not good.
When did you start to get a handle on like your depression and stuff like that and anxiety?
I think I was first diagnosed with depression when I was 19.
Oh, okay. Wow.
All right.
I think I had experienced, you know, flashes of it as a kid, but like didn't really have the language for it. And yeah, wasn't necessarily in an environment that was like, let's talk about our feelings, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think I, developed that whole knowledge of like the inner workings of my brain later, but yeah. And then anxiety, I don't know if I ever got an official diagnosis.
Well, do you feel it? I mean, is it present in your body in general?
Yeah, it just kind of showed up. I guess it was like, it feels like it also just started to increase, like as I started doing comedy and stuff, like I just became more aware of it, maybe in a way that I hadn't been before. Cause my mom would always call herself a worrier. She's like, I'm just such a worrier. And so I was just like, oh, that's just what our family does. We worry. But right. I never thought of it as anxiety.
Mm. Right.
By the way, for the listeners, I've cut out the sound, but the buzzer just went off. And we are we are not mutants yet.
Oh.
Did you hear it, Par? It went off, the national alert system.
No, but my phone did a ding earlier, and I thought it was that, but I think it was a Postmates notification.
That, in its own way, is a test of the emergency alert system for an individual. The individual emergency alert is, are you going to order?
So far, not mutants. So anyway, sorry.
So you said your mom was like a worry. So it was like, oh, we just worry, but like not necessarily being able to distinguish or thinking that that was any different than like having anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's like growing up in a sort of assimilationist immigrant household, but it is kind of like you're not you're not going out of your way to maybe find things to fix in yourself unless they will help you get into a better college, you know?
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Now, your sibling, are they also, do you guys share any of these kind of mental health battles? Do you, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah, we all have the A and the D.
Okay, all right. So it's a family affair. So at least you weren't feeling, like, isolated or this sense of, like, am I the weird one?
Yeah, no, but I experience this sometimes with even like friends who also struggle with similar brain things where it's kind of like, well, are we cycling together? Are you up? Am I down right now? Like what's our dynamic? You know, like, am I helping you right now? Are we both down in the trenches? Like it feels tricky sometimes because it's like, I don't want to shit on someone else's high period, but then it is like, but you're my friend.
Here's a question. Do you feel like, and I say this because I deal with this in a different way. So you're someone who's obviously actively committed to getting, to being better, feeling better, right? Like you do the things you have to do. You take your pills, you take your opposite action when you need to.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, a lot of your comedy and, you know, your writing centers on the depression mode, the anxiety. Do you ever feel that those are at odds? And I say that as somebody who I'm like, fuck, so much of my stand-up is me being angry that I was like, I don't actually, I'm like, can I still do that?
Oh.
But also not live with rage all the time?
Oh, like can there be a distinction?
Yes, and can there truly be wellness when a big part of what's connecting with people is the darkness?
Right.
Like my own wellness when a big part of connecting with
yes. I feel like I've had to draw a line just because when I started talking about my anxiety and depression more in my act, it felt like that was a thing people were specifically attributing to me or like being like, hey, check out this lady. She talks about mental health or whatever. But I had to like start to draw a distinction just because it became so clear that like me talking about it in my act has nothing to do with the experience of me having it in my real life, where it's like I can be struggling with anxiety in a very real way to the point where I have to like cancel a show, and it would be a show where I would like get up there and, you know, make some jokes about my anxiety. So it's like they're clearly not the same thing. And I think early on I would conflate the two and be like, well, I should be able to just suck it up and go do my jokes. But now I'm just like, oh, I think any artist who minds their personal life and their work, like it gives you maybe a degree of separation from it because it's more of a performance, but it isn't, it's still never going to be the same as like you having that in your day-to-day life.
Are you worried, Naomi, about like if you get well? Because I've seen a lot of stand-ups say this. It's like, I don't want to get well. Oh. Hey, it's me. I was just at Skankfest.
That's a good voice. Yeah.
I don't want to get well. I don't want to get well because then I won't be funny anymore. Like I've seen that kind of sentiment. And not, I guess, not just right-wing comedians. I assume Donut don't care about mental health at all. But I think that's a common sentiment because I don't think that's, you can still be funny even, I would push you to be more mentally well.
No, of course. I just think like, for instance, like my angle on so many things is, well, for me, it's like an intense emotion, right? Like
yes.
You can like, and before I used to talk about like, the things I love that are so stupid, right? Like I used to have a very long bit on the TV show Pit Bulls and Parolees, which was about, you know, a dog rescue in New Orleans, mostly staffed by ex-convicts, okay?
Yes.
And I loved it. And I could just, like, talk about everything I loved about it. But for me, it's either, like, something I really love or something I really hate.
Yeah.
And I think because I'm in a negative place, it's really skewing towards the hate.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so that's what I mean, where I'm like, you know, and then, because I just lately feel I'm like, does anyone really want to hear me get up and yell again? I don't know if I want to get up and yell again. And so, like, I don't really feel like doing
the answer, by the way, shows. To the first question is yes.
Yes,
I can't
I agree.
Answer the second question for you. That's something you have to answer internally.
Well, it's like, am I Lewis Black Lady? Is that my comedic persona?
No.
I'm Lewis Black?
Because
he was yelling. He yelled the whole time, Lewis Black.
Oh, that what a terrible, I can see the t-shirts now. Ugh. No.
Did he have t-shirts?
I'm just saying Naomi's.
She makes
t-shirts. It says Lewis Black Lady, and it's like her with like Lewis Black's glasses or something. I don't know. It just popped right into my head, and I'm just like, oh, this is a path you could take if you wanted to. It's not a good one. I don't think we would enjoy it past the initial joke, but
yeah.
But I think it's also maybe part of, because I have always had a sort of self-loathing part of my brain specifically towards my own work. And so I think it's kind of like no matter what you're doing on stage, I think you find a way to be like, nobody wants to see this. Like, I feel like I've had that, you know what I mean? Like, I've had that thought in various phases of my stand-up where I'm just like, I'll see whoever goes on before me and I'll be like, why can't I do something like that?
Right. Why can't I be like, just like every man relatable?
Yeah,
like,
they're
like gentle comedians where I'm like, that was well constructed and you didn't have to open a wound. You know?
What do you want to talk about? Charmin? Like, what is the thing that's like?
Oh, yes.
But there are people who could
do it. 2-ply. I need 3-ply.
There are people who are literally like, you know what I wish? You know what I wish my family was like? Those Charmin bears. Now that's a family that stuck by each other. You know what I mean? Like, someone can do that and have it be so successful. They could do that for 45 minutes.
I know. I almost feel like people, well, not to pull the WOC card, but sometimes I'm like, I don't feel like we're given the same bandwidth to just be like the everyman for both obvious reasons and because people are like, what's your angle? You don't look like Brian Regan.
Right. Yeah. It's like, what do you have? It's like you get up there like, oh, she's about to give us the what for. You know, that's what they assume. And you're like, I don't feel like giving you the what for.
So wait, Aparna, how do you get past that self-loathing? Is it just like over time, you know, therapy? Like for me, the thing is the way I've gotten more mentally healthy has been talk therapy. So I've been in therapy for about 10 years.
Yeah, and also you didn't have any self-loathing to begin with.
You didn't?
No, she's making that up. I don't know
based on the person I know, you come from a place of confidence.
It's a mix. It's a cocktail of extreme egotism and extreme self-loathing at the same time. Over time, I've poured out the glass and started pouring in new liquids.
So I've lost the metaphor.
There's still a little self-loathing. So there's still, you know, there's like a finger of self-loathing. What do you call it when you make a mixed drink? What are the little, that little thing?
What is a finger measurement? I never
like
understood
a finger, a little
this.
Finger. Like you put it against the glass.
But which finger?
Any of them. They're all relatively the same.
No, they're not.
Width, except for, look, I'm holding up my fingers now. They're relatively the same width.
Okay, but I.
Except for my pinky.
And your thumb.
Well, but your thumb's not involved. You know, when you're like, imagine putting your hand around a glass.
Oh, I see.
And that's why it's like 3 fingers, 4 fingers of something.
So you got a little self-loathing in there.
Okay. Okay.
You still got some arrogance in there, but then you've got some kind of like peace and calmness. There's also a new mixture in there from talking about.
This is wild because I've been with Andrew for so many years.
Yeah.
And I've seen glimpses, and I mean literal glimpses in 13 years of. Maybe a touch of self-doubt, but never
a touch
and never such that it ever stopped him. Like he's somebody to me who just, he enjoys the act of creation. You ain't taking that away from him and he is good at it. And I say that as somebody, you know, and I say that like I'm in awe, right? Like you don't seem to me like you're not somebody who sits and goes, maybe I'm not good enough or maybe I don't deserve it. You make and you kind of like.
Well, hold on. Because I have
a
different philosophy on this stuff. No one deserves anything. Like we don't live in a meritocracy, right? So if we did, then it would be a little different. But like, you know, when people get the things they get and amass the fortunes they amass based on luck and family and that's it. I mean, look, it's not that talent isn't immaterial, right? Like you both get a lot of the stuff you get because you're both talented. However, that's kind of like a coin flip on the edge of what's happening because if you both came from like powerful Hollywood families, that talent you would get things and the talent,
regardless of whether you were talented
or not. Right. There are things like that. And so, you know, I know that it's basically luck. And so if I get things or I don't get things, it doesn't have anything to do with my talent. And I'm middle-aged now. I have spent a good part of my life dedicating myself to writing and to becoming good at it. 10 years ago, I mean, I was writing sketches that were abominable. We're like literally, you know, the audience can't follow it because we're constantly pulling the rug out. You know, I was like, I had watched Stella and I'd watch a lot of British stuff with like Matt Berry in it. And I was like, oh, well, I want to do what they do. And so I just did the next step from that, which is just pure fucking nonsense. And no one knows what's going on. And like, you know, or I would do an improv set and I just started improv and I would be fucking terrible. And then I would go sulk out back of the venue of under St. Mark's, sitting on the stairs out there.
Oh yeah, you got it, honey. Because you're already in the basement, right?
Yeah, when you're performing.
And so when you're sulking, you have to come up to street level.
Yeah.
You gotta get up to where the people are.
Yeah, and then it's just like, yeah. And the self-loathing is just like, you know, a sphere that envelops you.
But right. Then did you use that as fuel? Because I feel like I early on, you know, when you are in those early years and you're like, I don't even know if this is the right thing for me. I would often use that to be like, you don't deserve a place in this. Like, you don't know what you're doing. And I honestly don't know what kept me going forward other than maybe just like, this sounds Dickensian, but like a kind word from a stranger.
Picture you as a beggar child in Victorian England with a little tin cup and to have someone just walks by and just says like, I loved your stand-up set last night.
But sometimes it literally would be that. It would be like one person sent me a nice note and I'd be like, well, I guess I'll keep going.
It's so true. I'm always like, because I had those moments. Like, I remember doing a set at Broadway Comedy Club where it was like, and it was also like ladies, you know, it was pretty early. I would say probably in the first 3 years. And I remember it was like, we each got $25 for our spot. She's over here. We're always checking in on the dog.
Oh,
because
sure.
Because she has a tendency to lick the floor and then it's a whole thing.
Oh, no.
Anyway. And I remember I bombed at Broadway Comedy Club.
Yeah.
And I remember because I was like, you know what? Especially those comedy clubs that are like in Times Square where a lot of these people, English may not be their first language.
Yes.
They were like barked in off the street. And so seeing comedy in the first place wasn't their, goal. But I was like, they're not getting me. They don't like any of these Jubu jokes. They're not like feeling it. But I remember I felt so terrible. I just like walked out after my set. I didn't even get my $25.
Because
I was like, I don't deserve it.
Yes.
And, you know, I was like, I'm so embarrassed. Oh my God, you're so stupid. You're terrible. Because it was in this moment where I was like, I don't know how to pivot, right? Like,
yes.
I see comics where I'm like, okay, this isn't working. And then they'll just like pull something else out.
Right.
Or they'll be like, let's do a bunch of crowd work or something. It's like, I don't have that in me. It's like the set is the set.
Yeah.
Like, I can do bits and pieces, but it's kind of like, if you don't like a black lady yelling, I can change the topic, but it's the same delivery, babes. And so I was like, and I just remember that. And I'm like, how did I end up getting back on stage after feeling like a true
monster? Well, I don't know about you, but like to answer the question, it was people that I did not respect were higher up on the quote unquote ladder than me. And I was just like, well, if they're there, then why don't I get
to
be
there? See, that's the healthy way to look at it, Parr.
Why don't I get to be there? And also, I think the other part of it was I had a whole other career before I came to comedy. And I knew that I was not willing to put up with the bullshit to do the thing I loved, which is philosophy. Like, academia was so fucking dysfunctional and so gross, and I hated most of the people there. Outside, I loved my students, and I loved a bunch of my fellow grad students. But like a lot of the, and my mentor, but a lot of the professors were just like, you know, just going, like getting along.
Yeah.
Going along to get along, is that the phrase?
Yeah.
They were just like, you know, and it's just like, well, this is what we do. And they weren't producing anything of value, and they weren't saying anything interesting. They were just, you know, well, I published this, and now I collect my check, and I get to have a sabbatical, and I get to have a summer home.
Andy, this sounds a lot like Hollywood.
But
exactly.
But I love writing comedy and writing television more than I love writing philosophy.
I see.
So I'm willing to put up with the stuff, that kind of same stuff in Hollywood,
right.
Whereas I wasn't willing to put up with it in academia, where like it's also like such a cloistered, closed off. No one was trying to do anything in public, really. There were like very few public, especially not in philosophy, very few public intellectuals, if any. Where at least here, there's an outlet into the world where you are interacting with people,
yeah.
And people see your stuff and react to it. And also a kind word. I'll tell you what too. Like early on, I did I auditioned a show at UCB that was very well received by the audience.
Yeah.
But the artistic director hated it. However, he brought us in. He's like, "I hated your show, but I love you guys."
Oh.
And he's like, it's Anthony King who wrote. We did a musical, and he writes musicals. And he's like, "You didn't do the normal things you're supposed to do in a musical. We just wrote like."
He was like, "This is a fucking mess." I was sitting in front of him, but it was like, funny, and it was like such a, you know, the crowd was like into it because it was, as Andy said, insane. It was unhinged. Yes. It was called Rockefeller Centaur. Okay, and there was an actual centaur. So let's just use that as a baseline.
Right, but he said he really liked our sensibility. He's like, "I want to see more from you guys." And that, I think, really kind of buoyed me. And that was like the first year I was doing comedy in New York.
Yeah. Right. I think early on, when I started in DC, I opened for like, you know, some comedians I really looked up to, like Paul F. Tompkins and Maria Bamford. And I really think, you know, just them being so like nice and encouraging, I was like, okay, well, I really like what you guys are doing. And you don't seem to like despise me, so maybe maybe there's something there. But it would very much be like looking for that outside sign.
Definitely.
When did you internalize it though, or have you not internalized it?
I think I've internalized it in that I've been forcing myself to do affirmations.
Have you now?
Interesting.
I have.
Interesting,
because we've written your character like that.
We've actually written your character with affirmations, Aparna, so that's hysterical.
I know I rejected them for so long because I was like, that's not going to work. But then I don't know what changed recently, but I just started doing them, and I hate to say it, but sometimes it helps.
Okay.
Before we go to our break, though, now I'm very curious. Alongside of all of this, how has your, we'll call it your mental health journey, for lack of a better term,
sure,
affected your romantic relationships?
I think it has often led them to either end or, like warrant a discussion.
Interesting. Is Gabe your first long-term relationship, or have you had
my first long-term, but I feel like most of my previous relationships ended because I was struggling with depression.
Oh, really?
Was it that withdrawal? Like,
yes.
The way you said you would withdraw, you think that would be part of it?
Yeah, withdraw and sort of be like, what are you doing with me? You know, like, you got better things to do. Like, I don't know what's going on with me, sort of thing. Like, just kind of remove myself mentally and, from the situation, just kind of, like, check out.
That's fun. That's fun to be
it's
with.
It's so fun.
That's funny. It's what I don't really know your dating history. I'm sure, like, I knew, like, at the time, like, I saw you with whoever. But like,
no, I don't think so, because Aparna like keeps it to herself. She's not out here telling all her business. And then I feel like you're not, like, you go do your shows. You're not like, here's my lover on my arm as I go do my set. You know
what
I mean?
You
like,
did, when this was a live show, you and Gabe were on together.
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, true. Gabe has been now my longest relationship, so.
But also, that was a big deal that you brought Gabe on stage.
That's true. Like, I think I was nervous because I was like, I don't feel like he signed up for this.
I don't know, former hand model.
Former hand model.
Now, though, what do you think made the relationship different? Certainly, Gabe is his own person. And as you said, for instance, him saying, "You got to talk to me," I assume is like a big part of what helps. But what made it different for you? Were you in a different space that you could not withdraw, show up for your partner, use your words? Kind of what was different on your end that is making this more successful?
I think he's more maybe emotionally mature than past
you
relationships
are?
I've had. Oh, yeah, yeah, me for sure. Me for sure, no question. But yeah, so I think he, and just like more adult in a lot of ways. Like I think my previous two relationships before him were both with aspiring comedians, and you know, I wish him all the best, but
we can't have two of those.
It's hard to have two. And so there weren't any of those weird like comparison issues or like things around that. And I think that just made it feel a lot safer or just more grounded in a way that I hadn't felt before. And yeah, I would still say like, you know, we have our little tiffs, but I just think we handled things a lot more maturely, and maybe also because we met like in our mid 30s. I think we were both kind of like knew what we liked, knew what we didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
We're like too tired of putting on the show that you do in your like 20s and 30s.
Right, right. You were like, look, watch the specials. Okay, there's the background. I ain't got time to tell you all this. Okay, I'll go through it. Are you in or are you out?
That is, if you are a comedian that has specials or albums or whatever like that, and you're on the apps, you can just text them a link.
If you're the comic who is open about, right, if your act is, this is who I am,
you'd
be like, here's a nice, concise way to for me to tell you.
Sure. If Mitch Hedberg had been on the apps, I don't know.
I was telling someone the other day, I feel like I learn more about my friends on podcasts than from knowing them in real life. And I was like, is that okay?
Aparna, I was thinking about that this morning when I was thinking of what questions to ask you. I was like, I mean, we've known each other for 10 years. I mean, it's here where I'm like, oh, I can finally ask you pointed questions.
Totally.
But does this happen to you where it's like, oh, do I know, should I have known this? Like a question that I may have asked you, like, you know, the last time we all had dinner together, something like that, but didn't. Because I was in my head and being like, wait, have I asked you this before? Is this some piece of information I should know? And so I'm just not going to ask it. Now I can finally ask that question.
The podcast,
right,
Mike.
Now that it's for the public.
Which is insane, right? Like, it really is. Yeah. But I also feel this way because like about friends where I'm like, I'm terrible at gift giving. And that's in part because, for instance, when we were in middle school, high school, you knew someone's favorite color. Favorite band, favorite whatever, right? Like the things, like we were, I think our identities were so tied up in our interests.
Yes.
Whereas as adults, I'm like, I could tell you all my business. I don't know which TV show you're watching. I don't know like where you like to get your clothes. I don't know like a partner's favorite color. I'll guess green. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I feel that way with my parents. I'm like, I don't know you people. What do you want?
I'm like, I don't know these facts the way I think I used to. And so then I'll be like, are we friends or am I a bad friend? But then I'm like, I don't know. Shit, we're 40. Do what you want to do. Tell what you want to tell.
Yeah. I'm like, at this point, my expectations of my friends are like, show up when you feel like it. Otherwise, we'll catch up in 6 months.
All right, here's a pointed question. What was your longest relationship before Gabe?
I think 5 years, just under 5 years. So not so short, but...
Right, that's a long one.
Oh, yeah, that's a real one.
But I talk about it in the book, but it was with another comedian, and I do feel like by the end, he was kind of like, it feels like we're more like really good friends. And I was like, yeah, and I love that. And he was like, yeah, that's not a relationship.
Okay. checks out.
Do you name them in the book?
I don't name them, but I think most people who have known me would know who it is.
Mm. So it's, but that's so funny. Mm. So that's
Robin Williams, of course.
But it's also someone I broke up with right before I moved to New York. So I think maybe New York friends don't know.
Right. I know of, but here's a, because I was also looking in the book. I don't realize, was Totally Biased when you were writing for Totally Biased? Is that what moved you to New York?
Mm-hmm.
Was working on Totally Biased, you know, again, as someone who I think of as such a strong writer, was it suddenly the act of having to write all day on the clock that made you feel a little impostery?
Yes. And I think just right before that job, I had been a temp. And I think I just like couldn't believe that like someone wanted to hire me to write comedy. So I think it was very much just that the stench of temp was still on me.
And the stench I was of like, temp.
Like, I was just like, these people all belong here. Because I was also hired mid-season, so it was a little bit like trying to have to figure out everything after everyone else and, you know, trying to validate why you were brought in. And I think that all kind of felt scary. And, you know, moving across the country, short notice, that those jobs are always just like, be here on Monday.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was the same for me. But I loved going from a day job to a writing job because everyone at my day job was just like, this joker, like I remember my boss being like, you know, I know people who comedy. They do regional theater or they do whatever on the weekends.
Right.
And then during the day, they're working at the bank. So she wanted to mentor me into her job eventually.
And Andy said, no, thank you, ma'am. And I was I give off the energy of someone who wants to learn more about this?
Yeah. And so it was so satisfying to get that writing job from first writing job and have to move to LA from that. And that was just another step on my journey to throwing out the old cocktail of self-loathing and arrogance and pouring a new cocktail.
Oh,
and
sure.
On that, why don't we take a quick break and we'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Can we take a minute and talk about Skims? Now, you know I'm a recent Skims convert, having tried their underwear in the last few months, and I am now living lifted, supported, changed. So I decided to keep trying new stuff. And let me tell you, Skims basics and foundations are where it's at. Yes, I recently got the Soft Smoothing Seamless t-shirt. And y'all, it is so comfortable. It's been the perfect layer for me. I'm rocking it under a cardigan or a sweater when I want to keep it fitted and fabulous and not look all bulky. I mean, y'all know I'm back to work, hashtag blessings. And I'm definitely that girl who is always cold in the office, okay? I need my layers, but I'm still trying to look put together. And the Soft Smoothing Seamless shirt is helping me get it right. And I also got the boyfriend t-shirt in Heather Gray, and it is so friggin' soft and comfortable, and it's giving casual but intentional when I wear it with a pair of jeans. I'm feeling very good in it. So if you want to give these and other basics a try, shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com. Now available in sizes extra, extra small through 4X. Thank you for the range, Skims. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows. Again, that's skims.com. Go check out everything they've got and the new t-shirt shop.
Dear listeners, Andy here doing the ad read again, and today we're talking about MeUndies. As the male half of couples therapy, I was asked to do this one because we're talking about boxers, which, and I hope I'm not breaking any confidences, Naomi does not wear. Now, if you're a podcast listener like me, you've heard plenty of ads for MeUndies, and frankly, I had always thought it's underwear. How special can it be? And then I tried them, and friends, it is like wearing magic. It is like wearing a dream. It is so soft, there is nothing earthly I can compare it to. I am embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed to say I'm middle-aged and just finding this out, but the material your underwear is made out of really does make a difference. I won't say where I usually get my boxers from, but for comparison, MeUndies are like wearing a cloud covered in angel's feathers, and the other ones I wear are like wearing a bear trap smothered in puke. MeUndies got style for everyone, from all black classics to fun expressive prints in sizes extra small to 4XL. And they use sustainably sourced materials and work with partners that actually care for their workers. Also, I gotta point this out, there is a particular technology that the folks at MeUndies would like me to discuss. Now, you know Naomi is sex negative and I am sex neutral, so I didn't want to have to say what this technology is, so I asked friend of the show, friend in real life, Mort Burke, to say the phrase. So, okay, here it goes. For any listeners with penises and testicles, I can say medical words. You might be interested in MeUndies' sophisticated
contoured pouch and ball caddy.
What's that again, Mort? They're incredibly comfortable.
Contoured pouch and ball caddy.
Wonderful. Thanks, buddy. Okay, soft underwear comes in all packages at MeUndies. So to get 20% off your first order plus free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/therapy. That's MeUndies.com/therapy for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
And we're back with a part of Nunchurla, Hedy. A part of people need our help. They need our help. They've written in. You know, maybe you can throw some affirmations their way.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. Why don't we do this question now? I want to start with something a little softer.
Okay.
Something not as hard hitting, because that's what this show is known for, hard hitting advice questions.
Oh, sure.
But as pet owners ourselves, a partner, you also have two cats.
Yeah. Two daughters, two rambunctious cat daughters.
I thought this might be appropriate. Here we go.
Hey guys, long-time listener, first-time caller. I don't even know if I need advice as much as I need that, like, halftime, we're down, I don't even know anything about sports, but we're down a lot in points, and I need that inspirational speech, because I have three animals, two of which are my sweetest, and I love them, and I have one who's really mean, and she is a queen, and I love her, and she causes really no issues, but I have three pets, and I am giving everything. I'm giving this old dog skin medication. I'm giving him weekly medicated baths. He's getting fish oil. He's getting all of this stuff. And then I have another cat who's got, he has to take a pill every day. Cat pill every day. And then he needs a B12 shot. He's on steroid. Mm. And he's just pissing everywhere.
Oh.
And then, you know, this dog with skin issues, he rolls in poop today. And it wasn't animal poop. And when people ask, how do you know it wasn't animal poop? You know. You know it wasn't animal poop. You know it was maybe homeless poop. And I know where he was and how it happened. And I'm just at my wit's end. And I need that reason for why I love these creatures, okay? I know you guys give everything to your animals. And I know you got three, and it's company. And I love them, and I love you all. So please respond and tell me, why do I have no kids, and I'm over here paying as much as I would if I had a kid? And why I need to keep doing this? Because I love them dearly, and I can't get rid of them. And they're my family, but they be testing me. I am being tested. So your thoughts? Give me that inspirational speech. I love you guys. Bye.
Oh, my gosh. So much in there.
Yeah. I identify with this. It really resonates with me. Because everything, I mean, besides the fact that, like, first Prem was sick and then he passed away and now Squee is sick and we're giving him daily medication. He's going for chemotherapy every couple weeks. It's a lot. With Mabel, everything's anxiety producing. Yesterday, I took her out for her night walk and she brushed against a spider web and I freaked out because I'm like, what if there was a black widow there? And I grabbed her and then I like spent 2 minutes with a flashlight looking into the web to see if there was anything.
If you could identify the spider. Yeah, the spider. Andy's taken to identifying spiders.
I'm pretty sure it was a spider that was like about a millimeter long. It was nothing. But like in my head, I was just like, oh.
Right,
I was so like anxious that, like, when I brought her in, I left the poop bag in the hallway, which Naomi discovered this morning.
I said, why does it all smell like poop in here? And then realized it's because the poop bag from last night.
Because I put it down, and then I spent, you know, a good 5 to 10 minutes combing through her fur looking for looking for this phantom spider that my brain conjured.
Well, not even just that. Again, I think since we've gotten her, we got Mabel in 2019, as everyone who knows us will know. She was diagnosed with breast cancer, mastectomy, chemotherapy. So that was all like end of 2020 through 2021. Then she gets well. Prembly gets sick. It's his medication from pretty much 2021 to May 2023. Then finally it was, okay, Squeeze seemed fine, but we should give him some attention just because, you know, it's been by the wayside. The moment we take him in, they go, well, it's IBS or lymphoma. I said, what a fun roll of the dice. They said it's lymphoma. And it's like, so it's been a real domino with each of our kids. I don't even think we've mentioned Squeeze lymphoma.
Oh, yeah, I guess
this is our first time mentioning it on an episode because I think kind of coming off Prem, we were like, no one wants to hear this.
Yeah.
But we're like, so this feeling of, yeah, it's so like, what are we doing?
Apart, but you have, how long have you had your cats for?
We just passed 3 years in April.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And okay, so these were, you got them quarantined.
We got them as quarantine babies.
Yeah. But also you've been, I know a little bit of sort of the move from New York to California, they've taken some adjusting, the girls.
Oh yeah, they were livid for about four months, give or take.
What does that look like? Livid.
Just, you know, like, just like so angry at us for you know, dislocating them and just not feeling the new space. And only recently have they really started to like make it their own. Like they'll do that thing where they kind of, you know, go into a room and then just flop down like it's theirs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if it's just part of cats getting older, but they do seem less playful. And Gabe is always worried. He's like always worried about their quality of life. He's like, could we be doing more?
Yeah.
And I'm like, they have it pretty good.
I mean, I think for our caller, what I would say is like, you're going through it, but I think something about, I think what I, when I take care of my animals, it is a wonderful reminder to me that maybe I'm not a piece of shit. Right? Because I really do, because especially, you know, as we've been talking about anxiety, depression, those things can make you very selfish. And at the very least, you're very just myopic, right? You're really turned inward. You're spending so much time beating yourself up, but that's just thinking about yourself. And so something I kind of look at where I go, you know, my animals seem slightly off or anything is happening, I don't hesitate for a second to be like, what are we going to do? How are we going to help them? Right. No matter how tired I am, no matter how stressed or anxious, it is like, okay, nope, we got it. We're going to give Squee his syringe. I'm going to like pay attention to Mabel. Things that kind of, and I think what I, in these moments where I go, oh my God, this is so much work. It's like, I try to be grateful that I can do the work. That even with, in the face of everything else, it's like, you actually do care about something more than yourself. You actually will show up for someone, something, however you want to call your animals, that's not you. And that's really great to know. Like every time, you know, you're giving your dog his medicated bath. And then his extra bath because he done rolled in some shit. Okay. Think about how lucky you are to be able to like help, to be able to solve this problem in a world where so many things are not solvable.
Yes.
And also like that your dog has you. Your dog is dumb. He was rolling around in human poop. Without you, he wouldn't have made it this far. Like, it's like literally you are saving a life. You're improving the quality of life for another creature.
And by doing that, you are making the planet a better place.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially if these are rescues. You've literally taken these animals off the streets. You take them out of cages. And you've said, I will lift you up.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for you, they'd be living in caves.
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 Is that true? Dogs in caves? It's a funny image.
No.
No.
Cave dogs. I also think I, as someone who myself in my own life has trouble asking for help, I forget that sometimes help itself is like therapeutic to the person giving it. Like it's nice to be able to help. And I, like you're saying, it can be a thankless thing where it's sort of like, oh, this is just a never-ending pit of need. But I think you're, I think it's everything Naomi and Andy have been saying, where it's like you're really putting something beautiful into the world and just in caring for these like creatures that are fully dependent on you and giving them that chance that they didn't have otherwise.
Yeah.
Just think of all the horror in the world. Imagine this. You are scraping feces off of your dog's hide. Okay. Just imagine, like, think through all, just, it's 2023. You can throw a rock and hit a horror. Okay. There is, it's happened all around us. Okay. Just imagine all of that stuff and think about how you are birthing into the world with this act, this moral act of cleaning the feces off of your dog's hide. You are birthing beauty into the world, okay? There is unimaginable non-Euclidean Lovecraftian just terror behind every door, around every corner. And you... again, in the act of scraping feces off of your poor, dumb, idiotic dog's fur, you are pushing that horror away. You are counteracting it. You are saying, nay, not today. Not today, Cthulhu.
Not today, Cthulhu. Oh,
yes.
Aparna, do you have time for one more?
Yes.
Great. This is comes to us. We've had this for a little while. I've been waiting for an appropriate guest. Hi, Andy and Naomi. Obligatory love your pod. Yada, yada. When I discovered Naomi, I was so hype to find she was also in a mixed religion / race marriage. Hey, also, Andy, are you drinking from the Fountain of Youth? And they say black don't crack.
That's true. Andy nice. Is really looking youthful. I know. He really stays
baby,
youthful.
Baby face.
Babes.
No, I. There's a lot of work I put into this. All right. I have a very good plastic surgeon. Following. No, I would be frightened. I'm frightened of. Anyway.
Okay, stay on it.
Following your podcast and journey, I know you guys don't want kids, and it seems like Andy is pretty secular, but I still need advice. I'm a Jewish black woman married to a white goy. Mm. My husband is atheist. I'm a soldier in Hashem's army. From my modest dress to Moda Ani and Shema at night, Judaism is how I live. You could tell how long it's been since I've read transliterated Hebrew.
Andy was like, I don't know these phrases.
Shema, of course. I know. What Jewish practices, if any, do you celebrate every year as a couple? Andy, as a fellow Jew married to a non-Jew, what are some customs you keep in the name of the culture? Naomi. And this Aparna, what do you find interesting about Judaism? What advice do you have for us? Ends with a smiley emoji.
No.
So,
wow.
So now Gabe and I both Jewish. You, Aparna, Naomi, both non-Jews.
You guys also need to know too that like Gabe and Andy are honestly in some ways doppelgangers or like cut from the same cloth. Yeah. Like they're often wearing the same brand shoes. They're like petite, heady Jewish men who like...
Yes.
An indie brand.
Yeah, by the way, he owes me a text because we were supposed to go see some outdoor experimental music. And I said, sounds great. Oh. And then I never heard back from him. He invited me.
He's going to be so mad at himself.
But yes, we are cut a lot of, like,
very
the same,
similar.
Like a lot of the same literature, like a lot of the same music. So anyway, yes.
Cut from the same cloth.
But then, Andy, are you, because I would consider Gabe a pretty secular Jew. Like even growing up, he didn't go to like Hebrew school or temple. I think regularly he didn't do like a bar mitzvah or anything. So I wouldn't say like, other than, you know, we have latkes when we go to his family's house for the holidays. Like, I wouldn't say there's, like, any, like, really firm orthodoxy happening. Mm-hmm.
Yes. No, I was bar mitzvahed and confirmed. I can still read Hebrew if I need to.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have trouble with transliterated Hebrew sometimes.
Okay, yeah. But, yeah, make it that fault. Yeah.
But were you raised with any kind of religion?
Yeah, we were raised Hindu, and but also not like, you know, really strict about it. Like, we would go to the temple for holidays and we would go to like community events. But yeah, we weren't like really rigid.
Do you still practice anything?
No, I kind of fell off the Hindu wagon just with all the nationalism. I said, no, thanks.
Wait, why is that a problem? Just because, you know, people are getting assassinated in other countries by nationalists. That's you find that to be distasteful?
Yeah, you know, it's just not for everyone.
Not for everyone. That's a nice way to put it. So basically, you got, neither of you are really attached as adults now to your religion. So you haven't felt like there's been like a blending of anything?
Not really, because I think as a kid there was some attachment where I just liked the ritual and kind of the something to believe in and like practices to follow. But yeah, as I've gotten older, I've kind of let go of a lot of that stuff. And Gabe, I would say, is pretty firmly atheist, but I'm more in the like Buddhist camp, mm-hmm. I would say, of just like that sort of life of suffering ethos fits neatly into my...
I went to Buddhist day camp, so yeah, I get it.
Buddhist day, can I go? I want to go.
Maybe we should all start that. This sounds like a good business.
But you, I mean, and we've talked about this on the pod, you know, it's been certainly since moving out to LA, where we're separated from both of our communities in a way.
Yes, yeah.
Like, for instance, I do like Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I like... Again, I'm an only child, so usually we would go visit family, right? And it would be kind of like over the Christmas break, a big old time, go to my grandma's house, decorate her tree. Like, I like doing that kind of stuff. And then in New York, of course, as an adult, we would go to my mom's. My mom loved to decorate her tree. We would listen to some Christmas music.
Oh,
and then I would help.
Right, and then when Andy and I were together, he would come do it.
Yeah.
But once we were living together and we were here in LA where I wasn't getting that Christmas fix.
Yeah.
We kind of went through it. A little bit of a negotiation, but just sort of like he was like, I don't know.
We each had lawyers. It was a real negotiation.
But Andy was like, I don't want a tree in my house.
What?
Which was something I had never, like, he had said that before, but it didn't really matter because I was getting my Christmas fix. You know what I mean? Like, I was going to my house, so it didn't really matter to me. And then suddenly I was like, oh, wait, I want something.
In my mind, it was a hard line. It seemed like that, like, it was just like something Gentiles do that we don't. Right. There's a handful of things that really differentiate us. Jesus being the big one. Right.
Sure.
But
sure.
But like certain symbols to me really kind of got under my skin. And the Christmas tree was one of them. And we had to really like, I was like, all right, we're not on the East Coast. This means a lot to Naomi. Okay. I find like it really was a kind of like, it means more to her to have one than it really does. Like, it doesn't, what does it really do to my identity? I had to like really think about it. Like, does it really kind of like, considering the fact that like, I don't like temple, it's really boring. I'm going to keep saying this. Temple is boring. If there is an interesting service and it's outdoors here in Los Angeles, please someone tell me, I will go to it. But I find a lot of the kind of like, because I am an atheist too, so I just like all the God stuff, I'm just like, all right, we get it. I like Yom Kippur,
but I was gonna say, right, because this person is asking what Jewish things have you kept, and considering you're an atheist, you've actually kept the least fun and hardest of all of them.
Right,
which is the day where you don't eat, don't drink,
because I find it meaningful. I do, and I like
meaningful,
singing songs.
Like in meaningful in the LA juice cleanse meaningful.
That's a very good question.
No, it's not
where
like,
you're like, I'm clean eating today.
yeah, I use Yom Kippur as an excuse to get onto a weird fad diet. Like last year, it was South Beach. I'm behind the times.
Right, now you're doing Atkins.
I'm doing Atkins this year. No, I really find it ethically meaningful to fast for a day and spend it thinking about how you can be a better person and how you can atone for the things that you, and I'll be honest, I was a great person last year, so there's not really a lot to atone for.
Yeah, that's what you say, because I was like, you sit here watching a movie. I said, is that reflection? Is watching the player an act of reflection?
That was part
I don't understand. I don't understand it all, part
because the night before the WGA strike, ended, and I wanted to watch the player to remind myself how great our industry is.
No.
I actually remember listening to a podcast. I think it was the Ezra Klein Show, noted New York Times columnist and a Jew.
New York Times Jew. I'm interested where this sentence is going.
But anyway, he had an episode where he interviewed this rabbi about just like, I think she had written a book about Shabbat and keeping Shabbat. And I really liked some of the principles of just having a day where you kind of, you know, you can't be on your phone. You just like gather and eat with people. Like that all sounded great. Like I would for sure want to do that because it just sounds like you're kind of taking stock of your life in a way that's not so attached to some of the fleeting priorities that we worship in our society.
Yeah, I would actually love to do Shabbat. I actually think that's something that I do miss a lot because that was a thing my family did, you know, every Friday.
Well, that's the thing I was talking about too, is like, you know, because he's like, I hate temple. But at the same time, especially since moving to LA, what I've gotten from you is that you can really feel the lack of a Jewish community. That you didn't feel just being in a city like New York. Because yes, there are Jewish people in LA. It's certainly not, you know, it would probably be another Jewish center outside of New York. But because LA is so spread out, it doesn't necessarily feel the way. Whereas I feel like you in Manhattan, honey, you know what holiday it is when you step outside. Yes. You know the vibe, right? And so as much as you say you don't like temple, I'm like, you got to go to like a young hip temple just to find the people who you can then go to Shabbat with. And like, that's what I mean. It's like, I get that it's boring, but at the same time, I'm like, I think it might be the only way you find the community, especially because nowadays there are like young, hip, cool temples. You know what I mean? Where like everybody is like under 50 and creative, and they're going to have like an indie rock band play at the end. Like you can, you can get both. And you know, for this person, I can't find their question, but the sort of what to keep, it does sound like the thing you want is the sense of community for you and like if you wanting to have a child, if what you're saying is like, I think the thing you keep and I think the thing that I think a lot of people would ultimately say about any religion they're in is they continue to be in it because of the community.
Yeah.
You know, because of the group, because of this having the similar touchstones, being in a place where you don't have to explain yourself, people who kind of get it, whatever it maybe.
And Andy, being in the community, you there's always the person who's sort of anti-community in the community. That's like a known figure, you know, like you gotta find this Waldorf to your Statler where you're both like, oh, we're doing this again.
Reading the Torah, more like reading the Borah.
Exactly. That's you. Mm-hmm. That's you.
But I was that person in B'nai B'rith. So I was in BBYO, the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization. Whoa. And it was me and this other guy, Uvi, who were the Statler and Waldorf were there. Like, everyone's like participating and having fun. And we're there in the corner, like making fun of everyone. That did not feel good, by the way, as a teenager. So I wanted to that's the thing. I wanted to be part of that. I just was existentially allergic to
joining.
No, to like, because I would have to change who I was. Because they're going to talk about Pavement with me. They were all like, I think there's also like, one of the things I find difficult is that I'm part of a subculture and I'm also in another subculture that doesn't cross over. Right. So a lot of my fellow Jews are not part of my own subculture.
What's your subculture?
Like indie rock and like weird literature. Gabe's the only one. Gabe.
And he's an atheist. Gabe.
He's an atheist and he inherently distrusts groups.
And that's why they should hang out together on the edge of a group.
But he's my like Uvi. He's my like, we're just going to be sitting there making fun of stuff. When I want, where are my fellow Jews that want to have a atheist Shabbat, but also love indie rock?
I think you're asking everybody to do too much. Because they got to love indie rock and not be into it, but also do it. Stop it. You're just there for one thing. Because you and I, for instance, we went to a friend of mine in New York, Seder, that I remember you were like, oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
I've never had a fun Seder.
Yeah.
And you know me, honey. I know only dynamic people.
Only green.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So like, these are people who were like, in like theater and comedy, and you know, it was a family thing, but like we had fun reading all the parts. Like,
yes.
But that's because that's who their personality, like that's what their personalities are like.
And right.
So that's why I'm like, this stuff is fun with fun people. Like they're yeah. people who do it, or for instance, it's not, they're people who do it, but it's not so stuffy.
Yes.
You just have to find the not stuffy people. And I think you find that when you talk to them, like, you know, like, okay, yeah, we're both a synagogue, but like, you can tell when you're talking to somebody, like,
yeah,
how devout, how orthodox, how rigid, you know, whichever word you would use.
You can literally see.
Yeah, but not just literally see, but also you can talk, but also you can like talk to them and you're like, oh, okay, you're not fun. You're not whimsical. You're not like loving.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
And so then, you know, it's like, and then that person invites you to Shabbat and you go, no, thank you. But like people who are fun, like yeah. this very fun black woman who's a writer. We like knew each other kind of online, and she's a WGA and she has a Jewish husband, and she's like all in doing the Jewish thing. So a reverse of our writer. But she was like, I do soul food Shabbat. Y'all should come over. And I said, soul food Shabbat is the vibe. That's like,
oh,
if we were,
gosh.
That's the kind of thing that we would be doing, right? Which is like a blend
yes.
of cultures, recognizing it, but also not being so rigid about it. That's there. Yeah. That's the option. You know, I think for me, I, as someone who's not particularly religious, but I like communities and certainly
yes.
learned a lot about Judaism just by going to Dalton. Like, I'm like, I'm down. I'll go wherever. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, look, is there a hot meal? I'm in. Okay?
Oh, totally.
It's hot meal. And then also, like, for me, it's, like, funny because it was more so, like, when we went to Andy's parents' house. Was it Seder? It was something where it was, like, what was it where I had to find the Afikoman because I was the youngest and I was, like,
Passover.
36.
Yes.
And they were like, you've got to find the Afikoman. And then the worst part is it took me a long time to find it apart. I'm an
no.
adult and they hit it and I didn't know where to look.
Yeah, because you don't know, like, all the, like.
Yeah, where can it be?
By, you know, middle age. I knew all my dad's high, you know, like,
oh.
Is it in the player piano thing? Is it yeah. the little part where you put the scroll for the player piano? Yeah,
usually see, I didn't know. I don't want to go poking around somebody's house.
No.
I was like, do I go upstairs? And they were like, no, don't do that.
Like, so wait, Aparna, is there any, I mean, I know Gabe's atheist, but is there anything appealing about Judaism to you? Or
well,
is
she said Shabbat. Were you listening?
Outside of that. I forgot. I was just going through these questions because then the last one was, what advice do you have for us? Okay, so what advice do you have for us? The last question in this. I
yeah.
think do not, your Judaism is your Judaism. And if there are things that your partner wants that you think somehow take away from your Judaism, they don't. If your partner wants a tree, it does not take away from your identity to have a tree there.
Mm.
Right. These things can coexist.
These things can coexist. It doesn't. Because your relationship, look, if you're very religious, your relationship with God, your relationship with the divine, or your relationship with your identity, if you're not super religious, is an internal thing. And if it's easily shakable by, that's a terrible way to phrase that, but if it's easily shaken.
There you go.
By someone having a symbol of their faith or something that makes them feel good. Then that's something you have to interrogate within yourself. Why are you so easily shaken by having this thing? Because that's the thing that I had to reckon with, where I'm just like, oh, it doesn't actually change my own relationship with Judaism to have a tree in the house.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what makes religion so tricky is, like, I feel like it's one of those areas where people feel like their ability to express theirs or fully lean into it is sometimes threatened by someone choosing different lifestyle options. And I feel like that's where I kind of hesitate, where I'm like, is this about your religion or is this just about you not wanting to challenge a belief system in any way?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just waiting for fashion yarmulkes. I'm waiting for
don't those exist already?
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not. I don't know. I think I'm sure they do. I'm sure someone's Etsy store is blowed up. Okay. Blow it up from selling them.
Does Louis Vuitton have a yarmulke?
Oh God, I bet.
I bet they do.
But I think that was sort of an answer to the question. We went all over the place. The point is, do what you love. And obviously, if you're mm-hmm. with this person, I'm assuming they're not, you know, pushing back on you and allowing you to be who you are. And they love found you as you were and love you for who you are. And I think it's sort of, you ask us, you ask Andy kind of what he loves, or you ask us what we think. It's more, it's like, actually, it doesn't even matter what any of us think. It's like, what's the stuff you want to keep? What's the stuff you want to tweak?
What does Adonoy think? That's all that matters.
Wow. Mm. That's the other question. But even I say, nope. I say, what do you think? What do you want? What if you make a baby and you decide you want to do X, Y, or Z? You do it all. You mix it up. To me, like, I would imagine if I had a kid, it would be about exposure to both and them, at least what I know, and then them finding what they like in either of them or liking none of it, right, as they get older and deciding, oh, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And then being like, all right, well, at least I told you the options. Well, at least what I know, right? Like, it's a, I'm not going to make the decision for you, but at least exposing you to those things and, you know, give it a try, see what works. You know, they don't really get to call the shots at like 8. If they're like, I don't want to go to temple. It's like, well, you ain't sitting here.
You are getting dragged to the car. Yeah. You are going to temple.
Dragged to the car. You going to temple. I ain't staying in the house. And you ain't staying in the house by yourself, so you going to temple. I'd be such a good mom. Anyway, Aparna.
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 Aparna. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're an angel. You're a dream. And everybody cop Aparna's book. We already talked about it in the beginning, okay? But, like, don't play games, okay? Aparna's out here writing, putting it on the page. You better buy this goddamn book.
Yeah. If you don't buy it, we're going to hunt you down.
We're going to hunt you down one by one.
You're not listening.
All right, you guys. Have a good week.
Bye.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.